Yeah, welcome back to Mid-Mornings on Main. It's 68 degrees. It's a beautiful morning. Now, these days are a little bit hotter than we would like, as it turns out, but the mornings are certainly great, and this is another one of those little nice where the flag is waving in the breeze out in front of the studio, and all the flowers are still beautiful across in the park, and everything is green right now. I pray we're going to get a little browner this next week because we don't have any rain in the forecast. Maybe that'll change a little bit. The theme from Andy Griffith there, you know, there was a time in this country when I know it had to seem like raising children was a lot easier for parents. You could turn on and watch Andy Griffith, and Andy would tell you how to do it. You know, if a kid breaks a window out, you withhold his allowance until the window gets paid for. And, you know, he learns not to do those kind of things. And I don't know, the population grows, and we have so many problems. And then the education process at one time, I think, took care of a lot of problems for a lot of people in helping kids get on the right path. And I don't know, as the population has grown, we've encountered more and more problems in growing up our children and getting everybody educated. And we have a lady joining us this morning. Her name is Dana Stahl, and she's kind of an educator's educator. And she has a book out called The ABCs of Learning Issues. And we're glad to have her joining us from near New York City. And Dana, good morning. Thanks so much for being with us.
Dan, thank you very much for having me today.
Yeah. This idea, I'm really fascinated right off the bat to know, at what point in time did you say, you know what, I bet when you were young, you set out, you thought, I'm going to work with everybody who has a problem, and I will help fix everybody, and everything will be really good. And then some point in time, you realized, hey, there is such a big world out there, and I got to share the knowledge that I feel like I have gained to help others, and I got to have to get a book out there. Is there a story about the decision to write the ABCs of Learning Issues and the timing of it?
You are correct. It stems back very personally for me. As a child, I had learning issues, and I was dyslexic. The term dyslexia didn't come about until 1963, and I entered first grade in 1966, and they really did not know what to do with me. And by fifth grade, I started to work with a learning specialist who turned to me and said, "You're really a very bright young girl. You just need another way to learn, and I'm going to show you." And so it was at this point, when I was 11, that I understood if someone could help me, I would then be able to help others. And so I was very directed in my course of studies to become a learning specialist and an educational diagnostician. And after 35 years of working with children and family and advocating for them, and I had decided that it is time to pass along some of the helpful hints that I have acquired over the years. And that is the foundation for the ABCs of Learning Issues.
I remember when I first heard the term dyslexia, and it sounded like, to me, you know, that word it was almost like cancer on steroids. It seemed like such a powerful and really awful word, and that someone with dyslexia would have to be really in a terrible, terrible situation that maybe they couldn't work their way out of. The term has really softened over time. What about early on, when even as a child, when that term popped up?
Well, the term dyslexia is, many children have reading issues. Dyslexia is a learning disorder that affects your ability to identify sounds and learn how they relate to the letters and sounds. And you can have some reversals in there. So it's the perception of how are you looking at a B and a D and a G, and the word God can become dog, and it gets jumbled. And the clearest way I can describe it is that if you close your eyes and you try to envision the word dog, you can see it, but a dyslexic child cannot visualize it. So it's hard to learn to read, and then it's hard to learn to write.
The stigma. But what about your parents and how they dealt with you up until this discovery that this very bright person was able to make about you? What was going on between you and your parents as you tried to learn?
Well, they were divided initially. My father completely understood what a learning issue was without understanding a definition. He was one of those children where he was asked to sit on his hands at school, and perhaps that would increase his concentration. So he understood what I was going through and would say to me, as long as you study and you prepare for the test and you did not watch television on the night before and you went in and you got a C and that was the best you could do, we're proud of you. And my mother was exceptionally bright in book school knowledge, and she was entered high school at age 12 and just kept looking at me and saying, I don't understand. How do you not understand this? So they were juxtaposed in their position, but they became excellent parent advocates as we actually moved through this together and learned how to negotiate and navigate a school system.
How did this learning disability affect the rest of your life? Did you play normally did you play well with other children? Was life outside of the classroom, was it pretty much what every other child your age was going through, you think?
I absolutely had a great circle of friends and would be outside after school playing kick the can and waiting for the good humor truck to come. It was an excellent social group. But as the studies increased and I entered into high school, my after-school activity became school. So I would go home and write study packets and created them. All the answers I got incorrect on a quiz or a test, I made sure that I knew the answers for them for the next time. And I worked very hard. And one of the things that children with learning disabilities understand is perseverance and resiliency and diligence. And those things carry you very far.
It's really fascinating when anyone's name, there are very few of us that have a name that it just belongs to us. It belongs to other people. And I was fascinated when I was looking at Dana Stahl, that a couple of other Dana Stahls that are out there, one is a master in international economic policy, in the Wurzburg area in Germany. There's another who's an architect at Teeter Architects and Engineers in Visalia, California. I think they deal a lot with environmental types of architecture. And I don't know, it hit me when those two things popped up that I wonder how limited did you feel, and how limited, as you look back on it, do you think were the opportunities that you had for what you could do? And again, as all of this relates to children today, opportunities to be anything you wanted because of a learning disability, was the possibility there, you think, really to overcome, or did you really feel like maybe you had to go down a fairly narrow path?
Well, I certainly knew that some things were easier for me than others. Learning a foreign language was quite difficult. But in terms of choosing a career where you have a passion was very important to me, because I wanted to be able to wake up each day. We work a long time in our lives. We're many several decades, and I wanted to make sure that I was working in an environment that I felt passionate about. And I think those people where their professions are their passion, they're ahead of the game. And by the time I made it to graduate school, I was studying exactly what I wanted to be studying. So learning became easier as the content of information became a focus of the scope of where did I want it to lead to.
At our guest this morning is Dana Stahl. She's an educational consultant, an author, and a career guidance counselor, and she has a pretty phenomenal book called The ABCs of Learning Issues. Phenomenal in that there are just so many children who have problems with learning. They're intelligent, but there are things there which make learning more difficult for them. Dana has written a book to help parents, teachers, anybody would enjoy reading this book from a standpoint, because Dana, who out there, we encounter young people all the time, don't we, that have these issues, and maybe reading this book might help people not only know how to deal with the problem, but to spot the problem, to say, oh, I think there's something here that I've thought about, I've read about, and maybe I can begin some process to help this child.
I completely agree. And I think the point that you raised regarding children with learning issues are bright, competent, capable children. Definition of learning disabilities can be the discrepancy between potential and performance. And that's really what parents observe at home and educators observe in school. And this book, The ABCs of Learning Issues, is designed to help bridge the gap between the home and school by promoting a common language between parents and educators.
How common do we think learning disabilities are, and is it, how easy is it to really gauge learning disabilities for people in the educational world, not so much even parents, but once kids get in school, how easily can these things be detected, and how prevalent do we know that they are?
10% of children in the United States have learning disabilities. 1 in 5 have anxiety, attention, or learning issues. And it is the positive homeschool partnership that allows learning disabled children to find success. So parents, when they are at home, they're observing their children, and they can see whether they have attention issues, anxiety, or some developmental delay in learning. It's important for parents to go to the schools and say, these are my observations, what are you observing? And then the classroom teacher and the parent together can begin the journey of trying to understand their observations and to go down the road of trying to define it, identify it, and then rectify the specified areas of difficulty.
Problems are, they're all different. If I've got heart issues and I need heart surgery, they take me and I go to a hospital and they work on me. They send me back home. I do a little rehab. I reenter the world if everything goes well. These learning disability issues, I would sense, but I'm anxious to hear how you see the issue, that one of the biggest problems is that, you know, you can't actually take the child, you know, to the hospital, work on them, fix them, send them back. That, no, they're out in the world, and while they're still out in the world, you're trying to work on the problem at the same time that they are trying to continue on with the education process, and somehow I sense that has to make things more difficult.
It does. But parents and educators working together is the key to finding success. So there are many challenges that parents face when they are dealing with academically challenged students. And they span the gamut from repositioning their academic expectation of their children's school experience, their production and performance, to learning to negotiate and navigate their way through the legal and educational side of being a parent advocate. There are things that can be done very specifically that will help the child. If the teachers and the parents think there are an issue, there's a child study team that's made up of a number of professionals, from the speech and language pathologist to the OT to the psychologist to the PT to the classroom teacher, and they come, they discuss their observations, they see whether the child needs additional help, if the building level support is needed, there's a 504 plan put into place, if there's a specified, identified diagnosis that is given to the child, then services are provided through an individual education plan. The key to the success is the homeschool partnership.
Was there a particular point after they discovered that you had a learning disability that eureka moment when you kind of felt like, hey, I've arrived with the help of others? I feel like I have not conquered this, but I've dealt with it to the point where I now feel very comfortable in the mainstream world of education. Was there that point?
There was the point of understanding that there was a team that understood who I was as an individual and who I was as a learner. And that was a defining moment, because people were able to recognize I was bright, competent, and capable, and yet I needed a scaffolding of support in order to do the schoolwork, succeed on the classroom discussions and quizzes and tests, and move my educational platform forward. And once I felt that that homeschool partnership existed and that everyone was in my court, I felt very comfortable and confident in school.
What was it like for you to move from secondary education to post-secondary education? Was that a much of a petrifying moment, I guess I would say?
Yes, indeed. But each of the transitions and crossroads pose their own challenges, from elementary school to middle school, and middle school to high school, and then once again secondary education to post-secondary. It was as if I needed to take my first semester of college, I did not do well. I was concentrating very hard on what kind of classes should I take, and what did I need to do in order to succeed, and what were the professors looking for in terms of quality of work on written assignments. And the initial part of transitioning from high school to college was quite challenging, but I completely understood that if you went and sought out the help of professors, writing centers, the support was on the college campus. I just needed to learn to advocate for myself and to be able to say, I need help in A, B, or C. Everyone was willing to help. And college became an excellent avenue for me to do today what I wanted to do.
I get this picture painted, and I hope you're going to tell me that, no, Dan, that's not the way it was at all. That you get up in the morning and you prepare everything and you go to class and you, besides eating some lunch and eating some dinner, that you're back in your dorm room studying, and that the social element for you was kind of non-existent. I hope you tell me that's not right.
That I will definitely tell you that's not right. However, learning time management and organization is exceptionally important, and understanding that that I needed more time than most in order to write. For instance, a professor gave out a sheet and said, these 10 questions are important. I'm going to ask you to write 6 essays from these 10 questions on the test on Tuesday. And I would go home and write out my written responses for all 10 questions and then memorize it down to periods and commas, because it was easier for me to prepare and understand what was being asked rather than to do something on the spot. And also, regardless of what was going on in college life, the library opened at noon on Sundays. I was waiting to go into that library to prepare for the coming week's work.
You identify 24 learning, attention, and anxiety issues in your book. I want to say, well, why don't you name all those, Dana? No, we don't want to do that. But that's a lot. But I think that's really important, the fact that you have identified 24 different problems here. And why don't you tell me why it's important that you've been able to, that you along through the process have been able to break down and identify 24 different learning, attention, and anxiety issues. Why is that important to have 24 different ones that you've identified?
The 24 learning issues that are identified in the ABCs of learning issues are the most frequently regarded learning issues that appear on psychoeducational and neuropsych evaluations that children have when parents are seeking out and trying to identify what areas of concern they observe at home and the school is experiencing in classes. These learning issues are on reading, writing, and math, but in addition are on attention and anxiety, and the cognitive ones regarding processing speed, working memory. So these issues, parents go to the psychologist, they ask the school for testing, and then they get their results back. And they sit down and they talk to the parents about it, and they're handed a report that can be 20 to 30 pages long. And it's daunting for the parents because they don't have the language of the field of every education. Every industry has its own language. And the ABCs of learning issues is designed for parents, educators, professionals, and service providers to help them understand how to communicate more effectively and efficiently together as a team. And it is broken down in such a way, it's non-threatening, it's user-friendly, and it allows parents to say, oh, this is what it is. Because if the parents in the report are reading that Johnny has a computational math problem, but don't worry, he understands the concepts, that doesn't really help the parent. There is a distinct difference between conceptual understanding of math and computational accuracy. And the book goes into what are the difference. In reading, there's a difference between reading comprehension, reading rate, and fluency in which we read. A child could read beautifully and not have any idea of what they are reading. And then there are other children who read very hauntingly, and they really don't have a clear, concise manner, but they understand what they're reading. So for parents, they need to understand what's the difference and how do I go about helping them. So in the book, there are not only definitions of what help, But then there are effective teaching strategies for both the home and the school.
Dana Stahl, our guest, and Dana's a graduate of both Boston University and also the College of William and Mary. We've had a couple of students from here. In fact, I know of three different individuals who have gone to William and Mary. I would imagine that that was a perfect post-secondary educational spot for you. And I say that to talk about, you know, how important it is to get people who have learning disabilities in the right spots. You wouldn't have wanted to go to the University of Michigan with 55,000 students, would you?
No, it was in Boston. Both Boston University and the College of William & Mary prepared me wonderfully for what I do today. And when I work directly with a child today, even though having graduated in 1982 and 1983 respectively, I still use the strategies presented at both Boston University and William & Mary. At Boston University, there were 80 students in the School of Education and 20 within my area, my concentration. And in the last 2 years of the schooling at Boston University, we moved together, those 20 children and I. And at the College of William & Mary, we were 12 graduate students working in the field and going to school from 4 to 7 or 7 to 10 at night and really sitting down and understanding how to read these psychoeducational evaluations and design prescriptive diagnostic plans for the home and the school. It's a holistic approach that needs to take place, and that is why I concentrate so on the necessity of the home-school partnership.
I'm almost afraid to ask this next question. You mentioned that 10% of students have learning disabilities of some type. What number of that 10% do we think are getting what we would consider, what someone like you would consider to be adequate help from the adults that they are dealing with?
It's a really great question, Dan. And it depends on so many factors. It does depend on the parents advocating for the children. It depends on the financial component of the support services within the public schools. It depends on the socioeconomic background of the parent, and can they provide the children with outside additional support from school or even an independent school environment that would focus the education on learning issues. There are many factors that go into place with regard to how many children are being assisted and really having the support services in place to help them negotiate and navigate their learning issues in school.
Okay, now you're very much the professional in this area. You have a great amount of expertise in this area. If we were to take you and we were to make you a first grade teacher and put you in a classroom of 30 students, and we use a percentage and we assume that three of those students are probably going to have some type of learning disability. It could be two, it could be four. Do you think, how long would it take you probably to spot those students who needed maybe to have some type of testing done so that, you could get to the root of their problem before they get to be 11 years of age?
First grade teachers are amazing group of educators in this country, and they are asked to do so many things, including teaching the children how to sit, listen, and learn, act in a cooperative and collaborative manner, be able to present for the very first time a formal curriculum on reading, writing, and math, teach the social skills necessary. So these educators in first grade, they are to be commended every single day. They are also there as diagnosticians, as you are suggesting. And it is harder for those to discern children who have attention issues of an inattentive type. Those who are really complying and not causing any difficulty, but they're zoning out. These children need to be picked up and observed very accurately by their teachers so that they don't get lost and fall between the cracks. And then there are those who have such tremendous listening comprehension, but you give them a direction in a written form and they are lost as to what to do. Then there's the ones who can compute math, compute 2 plus 2 in their head, 1, 2, 3, but you ask them to do it in the pen and paste book capacity and they are at a loss. So for these first grade teachers to really start to understand their students and who they have in their room and what kind of differentiated instruction is needed, they are doing a variety of tasks relying on a multi-modality approach to learning, both something kinesthetic, the hands-on, visual, auditory. They're trying every channel they can of how to make connections with their students and assess how are they learning, what are they missing.
I would assume that you have been working for quite some time on the what I'll call the Dana Stahl verbal and written assessment test for learning disabilities that would enable teachers to just have this little plan that you have come up with, and that would send them in the direction of where children are in terms of learning disabilities. Have you got that test finished yet, Dana? I mean, you ought to be able to make it simple for these teachers to do that.
It is a great deal of experience on really in understanding those children who come in, and we all have to give them time to adjust to the new school year. But that 4 to 6 weeks prior to the parent-teacher conference is critical. And it's critical for the teacher to understand who are their children as individual and as learners, and who and how are the children responding to what they are trying to do. And that's the key, because you want them to be able to turn around and say, ah, they didn't remember it yesterday, but they remembered it today. What did I do differently today that allowed them to process the information? And that's what teachers do all the time. They're just trying to figure it out. What works?
There are so many situations in our society today where not only do these children have learning disabilities, they don't have the home support. I know, but teacher, there, when we talk about the education process, and boy, those first and second and third grade, those elementary school teachers can be so up against the wall, can't they? Because there are so many, I don't know what the percentage of instances where children now have inadequate support at home. But if you throw a learning disability on top of that, then it kind of starts becoming what many of us would see as an overwhelming situation. And what are your thoughts on how educators can deal, you know, with that combination of learning disability, lack of support at home? Is there any solution?
There, that situation is educators are dealing with every day. And actually, it's harder as the students become into the middle school and upper school years because computers can play such an important role in helping educators to design curriculum that will be interactive for their students. And yet, computers may not be available, or most likely unavailable, in many schools that would allow that to happen. And the parents are working, and they have to get food on the table and pay their bills, and that's their job. And in many cases, the students are left to fend for themselves in understanding how to negotiate and navigate their schooling. And it's very difficult on both the parents and the students, and the educators on the try their best through using the materials that are available to them. They're after school hours for support. And the Boys and Girls Club and the Y's that are there today are also helping by having calculators, computers, after-school volunteers, so that there's a safe haven for students to go to for extra help after school and to have the materials and supplies needed. Today in high school and in some middle schools, they're being asked to buy calculators that can cost $200 and $300 in which to be able to perform their mathematical calculations. And for many, that is just a deal breaker. And so what are they to do? And so the field of education is uneven in its access, as well as educators finding a way in which to level the playing field. And you are absolutely right that those students with identified learning issues are struggling more than their peers because there's less support in these environments than they need.
Dana Stahl, our guest this morning, she's an educational consultant, an author, a career guidance counselor in the greater New York City area. And she has she's written a book called The ABCs of Learning Issues. And this, what kind of response are you getting about the book right now?
On a professional level, I'm getting a wonderful response. It's won two awards, a Parent Teacher Choice Award, as well as an award, the NAPA Award, which is a National Parent Product Award. And it is being very highly received within the field of education. And I'm thrilled to see it because if you are even a support personnel of a occupational physical therapist or speech and language pathologist and you're working with children, you know your area inside out. But if that particular student has a working memory issue or a processing speed difficulty or a listening comprehension issue or an attention or an anxiety issue, then it is important to understand the profile of the students you're working with and not just the particular area in isolation, because children learn in a holistic manner, and the ABCs of learning issues really help parents, professional service providers to understand the profile of the students they are working with.
The availability of the book, I want to make sure that we let people know, you know, where they can get copies. And do you have a website that maybe even provides a little additional information on top of the book?
Absolutely. The website is educationalalternativesllc.com. And the books can be purchased through Amazon and bn.com, barnesandnoble.com. So it is available in English and in Spanish, and I do hope that listeners will take the time to look at it and review it and see if they would find it helpful.
We want to repeat those to you in just a very few minutes before we before Dana leaves us. But I want people also to understand that a lot of the things that we haven't really covered that I thought would be, well, I don't know, that would be more time consuming, and that that people would probably need the book to get into. But you give some very practical advice. And do you think most people really understand, hey, I can go to my school and I can request and I can say, you know, I think there might be some issues here. I'd like to have my child tested for these things. Is it general knowledge that you can do that?
I think it's very few parents understand that they have an equal voice in the process with their children, that they are their child's best advocate. And if they suspect something at home or they are observing something, that it is in their right to go to the school. And I do not think that most parents understand that. I think that they believe that, well, if there's anything going on, the school would certainly come and tell me. And what I think it's important for listeners to understand, do not underestimate the observations that you have of your children. You know them better than anyone else, and you need to go and ask and inquire, what can we do together that will help my child? There are 504 plans, there are IEPs, there are child study team meetings. Learn what they are. This language of education is so important. Every industry has that. Plumbers, lawyers, accountants, every industry has their own language. And learn the language of education so that you can work together with your school to help your children.
Mm. Education has become very complicated, hasn't it, in this country? We have language barriers on top of in many schools, in addition to the potential of learning disabilities. Are we falling farther and farther behind in the battle, Dana?
It is a continual challenge. In one school in Queens, they have 128 languages. So they have Babel in that. And the educators, once again, to find a common ground on how are you going to communicate information when there are language barriers is truly challenging. And with that, there are laws that say that parents are entitled to translation and interpretation at team meetings. But what happens beforehand? What about the communication on a daily basis? Some schools are providing dual language assistance, but there are more than just Spanish being spoken out there. There's Russian, there's French, there's all sorts of languages. We need to learn to understand who are the people in our community, what are their cultures, how do they feel about working together with the school, and how can the school best help to reach the community as a whole.
Kind of unrelated, but it is related, and certainly in your field of expertise. Are we way outnumbered in terms of the guidance counselors that we have in our schools versus the need for those people?
We are way outnumbered. Funding is the issue behind how many support staff schools are able to hire, whether they are social workers, guidance counselors, speech and language pathologists, occupational physical therapists. They are dictated by the funding that is allocated. And in many large school systems, it becomes a numbers game of how many children can really be assisted by the number of social workers and counselors on site in a school, because they're shared among the buildings within the system. And that in itself makes it very difficult for educators to be able to access help from these professionals when needed. And it is a funding issue that is really sad. It becomes less and less every year.
I've always sensed, and I went to a relatively small school with maybe 600 students in 12 grades, maybe a few more than that. And essentially two guidance counselors handled that workload. But in a small school, I always sensed they know everybody. They know the parents. They know the children. But as schools have become larger and larger, I sense that, now you can take a large school with 1,200 students and you can have the same mathematical proportion in guidance counselors, but they're going to be so much more overwhelmed. Schools are bigger. The hallways are bigger and longer, and the distance between getting to these students and a larger school means more geographic area and distance from the school to the homes of many of these students, and the ability to get any communication. I don't know if you would agree, but would it be true, you think, that larger schools have just added to a growing problem there?
When you have larger schools, you need greater faculty and staff and support personnel. And therein lies the difficulty. There could be absolutely, literally hundreds of students to oversee and not have more than one or two people for that position in your larger geographic areas where funding is an issue. And at that point, they're not doing what they were trained to do. They're not the counselors. They're not in there helping to be a liaison between the home and the school. They're not giving the educators in the classroom the strategies that they need to work with behavioral challenges. They're shuffling paperwork. They're doing the most they can to attend the meetings that are mandated by law so that they can provide the student, at least on paper, with services that are needed that may and may not be able to be accurately implemented. It is a very sad scenario how finances dictate what services can be actually provided to the students who need them the most.
The conversation, Dana, seems a little bit overwhelming, but there is success, isn't there? Where do you find success in what you're doing?
My success is in watching children move from one area of difficulty that posed great challenges that now no longer do, and they're at another educational platform in which they are then finding success. That the building blocks and the foundations have been laid in which they understand who they are as an individual and a learner and what compensatory strategy they need to incorporate in order to find success and can go out and advocate for themselves and can find ways in which they understand the time management and organization that they need to do the work. And if something is due on Friday, they have it in the writing center on Wednesday for review with corrections given back to them for Thursday revision for Friday submission. And those students find the success because they have learned, this is who I am as a learner. This is what I need to do. These are the people I need to seek support from. And I am going to be successful.
Well, it's an issue that certainly needs to be talked about. It's fabulous that you have written a book that can help parents. I think the encouragement, I would think, sometimes it's very difficult. Parents that are dealing with this, they would they just get overwhelmed by the issue, and they kind of go crawl in the rabbit hole, so to speak. I think one of the things I would really encourage would be brothers and sisters and people who go to church with other people and people in neighborhoods and that type of thing. Hey, if you realize that you have a parent that's dealing with some of these issues, and in some instance, maybe grandparents, that hey, you go pick up a book for them, leave it on their, leave it in their mailbox. You don't even have to acknowledge that you're giving it to them. Maybe would be a great idea of how to really help someone, Dana. In addition to people, a lot of parents out there who would just say, "Hey, I need help. This book can help me. The ABCs of learning issues." And one more time, talk a little bit about where to pick up the book and about your website.
The book is available on Amazon and through Barnes & Noble on BN.com. And the website goes in educationalalternativesllc.com. And for those parents who are listeners who go on and look at it, there's a portal of support on an Ask Dana component there. We can begin a conversation on concerns or questions that you have. And I think that you're right, Dan, that those parents who are feeling alone need to understand that they are not, and behaviors that they are observing at home are behaviors that are observed in other homes, and friends, neighbors, people at church, absolutely talk about it, reach out, say, "Oh, I remember that this is what happened to my son years ago, and now I see, you know, your son has this. This is the, these are some of the things that we did that were helpful." And not having parents feel alone in their journey is so crucial to them accepting what's going on and feeling that it is natural and they can ask for help and receive it.
Dana Stoll, we've only scratched the surface of this very, very delicate, very involved, very crucial issue when you think that one in every 10 students in our schools today has a learning disability. Many of those have not been diagnosed with that. The potential frustration for those students, for their parents, for teachers, and the main solution is a comprehensive work together approach, but not easy to get there. Certainly the ABCs of learning issues, a practical guide for parents, is something that can help. And Dana, best of luck as you go on. May you feel a sense of success much more than what I feel when I look at this issue, which is kind of overwhelmed for society in dealing with it.
Well, thank you, Dan, so much for having me on your show. I greatly appreciate it. I enjoyed it very much.
And there are, I said Andy Griffith was a great source, you know, to help you learn to parent in the days. It took a lot of pressure off parents. Sesame Street has been a great deal. Leave It to Beaver was really good. I mean, you know, it was kind of idealistic, but, you know, you can learn a lot about parents dealing with children from those shows. I don't know if we have as much help even in that area as we need anymore. But, folks, if you have a child, you sense that there is some type of learning issue there, don't delay. Earlier the better. There is help out there for you. And if you have questions, the ABCs of Learning Issues, a practical guide for parents, will get you information. It can get you started on the road to helping that young person get the education they need. We'll be back. We've got some guests live in the studio coming up in